Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good Friday morning again, everybody. You know those ads that look like regular content in magazines, on websites? They're labeled sometimes clearly, sometimes not, as sponsored content, but they look almost exactly like the regular editorial content that the magazine or website presents. It's called native advertising, if you haven't heard that term before, and it's controversial. We have two guests, one who basically thinks it signals the end of days for journalism, and one who thinks it will actually save good journalism. In one corner, we have Bob Garfield, co-host of On the Media. And in the other, we have James Dell, the ad director for Gawker Media. I bet you can guess who's on which side of the debate. They'll both be at WFMU's Radio Vision Festival tomorrow talking about this stuff. James Dell, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
And Bob Garfield, oh, you again.
Brian, it's good to be here. I can only hear you through the speakers in the control room, so you're a little faint. Nice to be back.
All right. We will try to fix that. So, Bob, advertorials have long existed. Sponsored content that is meant to resemble editorial content has long existed. What's new about how native advertising works now?
First of all, I'm actually going to send a secret message to the control room that I can almost not hear you, but I can hear every breath from your producers. But I did get the gist of the question. What's different about native advertising? Not a whole lot, actually. We have lived with advertorial in newspapers and magazines for since time immemorial. But newspapers that are credible and run ethically have always very, very clearly demarcated the line between the ads and the actual editorial. There's different typeface used, often different column width, different headline font, and on top of that, usually bordered, within lines. So boxed away and looking very, very different from the surrounding editorial matter. And the reason for that, of course, was so as to not trick the reader into thinking that they were getting some sort of reportage created by the newspaper itself. To some extent, the advertisers still got a little bit of borrowed interest from the prestige of the newspaper just by virtue of being there, but there was no confusion whatsoever. What native advertising does, at least as we see it most often now, is to do everything it can to make the difference between the content, the actual editorial, and the so-called native advertising be as difficult to discern as possible, leaving room for confusion, but in a kind of conspiracy of deception between the publisher, among the publisher, the advertiser and the agency. So
a conspiracy of deception. Oh, good. I'm glad we fixed the sound problem. And so, James Dell, an example from Slate from yesterday. There was an article that was in a section marked sponsored content, but used the same style guidelines as all their other content. It was sponsored by the University of California, and it was a pretty interesting article about a researcher who discovered life in a subglacial lake previously thought inhospitable to life. The researcher is a glaciologist at UC, but this was an ad. So do you not think that's a form of deception that we should be concerned about?
I don't think it's actually a concerning development. I think it's actually all we're doing is taking the pages that, you know, traditionally have been reserved for editorial and allowing advertisers to kind of make their case in those editorial slots. So as long as the advertiser is clearly disclosed, and Bob, I completely agree with you. I think bad native advertising is bad for everyone. I think good native advertising, like that Slate piece yesterday, can actually be really informative. You have an expert from the UC, I forget what you said, but Glacier, you know, an expert here who can actually provide some information that maybe the editorial staff at Slate doesn't have access to.
So who's actually editing it? Whose editorial standards are being adhered to?
Well, hopefully, if I know the people at Slate, I know that they run their two departments separately, right? So editorial and advertising, they don't talk about the kind of content that they're both going to be running. But on Slate, they actually look at it and they say, okay, is this up to or at least near our editorial standard? Is this the kind of content that our readers would actually appreciate? So I think that kind of stuff, and we do the same thing at Gawker, I think it actually adds to the experience as opposed to, you know, what you've railed on, Bob, which is, you know, these sponsored links that aren't very clearly demarcated and frankly don't actually provide any value to, you know, the readership.
Bob, you want to come
back
in?
I wouldn't say railed on. I would say harped on, obsessed on.
Okay,
and,
fair.
Until spittle comes flying from my lips.
But
yeah,
not basically. Railed.
No, heaven forfend. Look, I don't think there's a difference on this issue whether the content is fascinating from a University of California glaciologist or whether it's for a male enhancer. The fact is that the reader, there's two facts that are very disturbing about this development. In fact, I would even say three. Number one is that the reader thinks that they're seeing a third-party editorial content when, in fact, they are seeing something from an advertiser that is not clearly identified as advertising.
But if
that
is
deception.
Sorry, if it is clearly identified, though,
I don't think the word sponsored content does the trick because, after all, every ad, if you think about it, is sponsored content. A sponsor is paying for content. And until such time as in the indeterminate future, as readers come to understand that sponsored content means you are reading an ad, that does not in any way suffice. The second problem is that newspapers, the reason these ads are valuable is because the advertisers are living on the borrowed interest of the credibility and the trust earned by the newspaper or magazine over years or decades or centuries. And with every native ad that you use, that you run, that you trick the consumer, you're actually harming that very trust and credibility. And this is clearly a zero sum game. I mean, you know, you're not killing the goose that lays the golden egg. And you're cutting one slice off of the goose at a time, and eventually there's no goose left at all.
And James, it must be tricking people. It must not be clear to people the distinction between the ads and the regular content on these sites, because banner ads have a very low click rate of like 0.05%, 0.05% on regular banner ads. Native ads, from what I've read, have a rate of 15% compared to half of 1%. So you don't think some of that difference is due to people being duped into thinking it's actual editorial content?
I'm sure that there are some people who, you know, don't see the sponsored label and click on it on accident. But I'm also sure that 0.05% is also probably accidental. And, you know, we are a media business. We need to make money in order to support the great journalism that Gawker does. You can't build a business on 0.05% conversion rates. And that's just a simple fact.
So, Bob, let me throw that back at you, because every serious news organization in the world, from the New York Times on down, is saying they can't support themselves on the web, even though they have more web readers than they ever did in their old print editions, those that had old print editions. People don't buy advertising online on the models that have existed so far, which is why I think James argued that this not only is okay, it can actually save good journalism from, you know, business model destitution.
Yeah, that's what we in the radio host game call a rationalization. We also call it a Faustian bargain. Well, it is absolutely true that the reason native advertising has emerged is that the business model that sustained newspapers and magazines and all other media for about four centuries has collapsed. That not only do people not click on banner ads, the amount of money publishers can fetch for any kind of online advertising is vanishingly small. Classified advertising business has disappeared. Publishers are desperate, and it is absolutely true that our very journalism, so important to our democracy, is under siege because the business simply doesn't work anymore. However, that is not that it becomes this deal with the devil. If to save your life you do something immoral, unethical, and ultimately self-defeating, I would say that the best analogy I can come up with is that you are desperate financially and you can't pay your bills, and you turn to what? To make a living. You start walking, you become a street walker. And I, it's hard for me to see a very large distinction.
Did you just call me a prostitute?
Well, I have to say, I will say that, first of all, I'm talking about institutionally gawkers.
I'm not too worried
about the gawkers of the world. That is not really it is a combination. There's some news on Gawker. Its history is gossip. And it's more of an infotainment site than it is a news organization. But I want to tell you, the Washington Post is now accepting native advertising, not only online, but in its print product. And there is nothing that is positive about that development.
The Atlantic website just had one in conjunction with Scientology that got some criticism. So we're running out of time. But, James, can you two find common ground on this point that Gawker is maybe not trying to maintain the same kind of journalistic credibility, though not to say you're making stuff up in the areas that you cover, but without the same kind of image and gravitas and things at stake, frankly, that, say, The Atlantic or Slate or the Washington Post are? And so it becomes a bigger problem for those publishers than it is for you.
It's definitely a bigger problem for kind of the, legacy media companies. But a few points. Firstly, I would argue that, Gawker is one of the very few independent media companies that still exist out there. And editorial integrity is actually one of the most paramount things to our company's success. Our readers know, and this may be a generational thing between my generation and your generation, Bob, but...
Are you calling me geriatric?
I didn't use that word, but I've grown up on the internet. I'm used to this kind of, environment where you need to know what's an ad and what's not. You need to know what you're clicking on, otherwise you're going to get spam on your computer. Not on Gawker.
Put a different typeface on it and put some lines around it and put a colored screen over it, the word advertising, and go crazy. I'll be happy to see what your advertisers have to offer.
You're not giving the average 17-year-old web native too much credit for being able to discern advertising from content?
We're really good at the internet. Not that I'm 17, but we're really good at it.
Well, now that you've called each other streetwalkers and geriatrics, I guess we'll leave it there. Bob Garfield, co-host of On the Media, and James Dell, the ad director for Gawker Media. And they will both be at WFMU's Radio Vision Festival tomorrow, slinging more insults on the same topic, no doubt. Thank you both very much.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
And this is WNYC FM, HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio.